Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money, because whether or not we like it, money matters. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and today we are going to be answering all of your questions about the two-pot retirement system. So I must just tell you that over the last few months, I have been writing about it, I've been doing videos, and I have received so much feedback, questions, and to be honest, some complaints about the retirement, about the changes to our retirement funds come the 1st of March, 2024. So I thought it was time to go straight to the horse's mouth, so to speak, and actually bring in an expert from National Treasury to explain it all. But before I introduce my guest, I think it's worth just doing a quick recap for those of you who still wondering what this all is. So the two-pot retirement system will affect all retirement funds. That means that includes your provident or pension funds that you have with your company. By the way, it includes government employees. It affects the GPF members. It affects retirement annuities and preservation funds. Basically, from the 1st of March, all contributions to retirement funds will be divided between a savings component and a retirement component, or pot. We use the word pot sort of colloquially. That's why it's the two-pot system. So one third of your contributions will go to the savings pot and two thirds will go to the retirement pot. You will be able to access the funds in your savings pot once a year. However, the funds in your retirement pot must be preserved for retirement, even if you resign from your employer. Also important to know is that the value of your retirement fund the day before, in other words, the 29th of February, it's a leap year, so we have the 29th of February, it will be ring-fenced in a vest, what we call the vested component. And all the rights and rules that currently apply will remain. So, for example, if you resigned from your employer after the 1st of March, you can still access the funds in your vested pot. However, and this is where everybody's questions come, National Treasury is allowing a once-off seeding capital from your existing funds to be paid into your savings pot. This will be an amount equal to 10% of the value of your retirement fund on the 29th of February to a maximum of 25,000 Rand. Okay, so that is, I think, a nice brief overview, but it is now time to get into some of the details. And I am thrilled to have Mr. Basil Maseko from National Treasury, where he is a director of tax and financial sector policy. So welcome, Mr. Maseko, and thank you so much for taking the time to unpack some of this, some of these details for us. So I want to start off with the first question, and just to make sure, this is definitely happening, is it? On the 1st of March, 2024, we're not going to have any delays or anything. Can we take it as given?
Well, you can take it as given, but I think the look at the process is that the legislation still has to go to Parliament. So I think there has to be a debate going on in Parliament. So everyone would have to put forward their argument as to why they should proceed in 2024 or not.
But at this stage, can we kind of assume that it will be going ahead? Largely, I mean, barring, I suppose, some big exceptions.
Look, I think there are arguments for and arguments against. I think the arguments for have typically been coming from individuals because they want it as soon as yesterday. And then the people who are arguing against are typically industry. So industry is saying we need final legislation so that we can work our systems based on final legislation. So the, at the moment, we have a draft legislation, which will only be passed in December this year or January next year. So they can only work their systems based on what is finally in the law. At the moment, we don't have final law. And then once the law is finalized, they need 12 to 18 months to change their system, educate their members, and educate or train their staff in order to get the system working. And then there are also rule amendments that have to be done. So that might take a bit of time with the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. But at the moment, what's in the legislation is 1st of March 2024. So let's work on on the 1st of May 2024.
I know, and certainly when I speak to the industry players, they acknowledge that this is extremely tight deadline for them, but they seem to be, accepting that they have to be ready by March. So I imagine, yeah, I think, it should, for all intents and purposes, go ahead. But I think I also wanted to ask you, and I think this is a very important starting point, is to understand why National Treasury is introducing this new system and what is the intention and thoughts behind it.
Before, okay, I think this whole thing started in 2020 with the COVID. But even before COVID, people would, well, fund members would resign from their employer in order to access their retirement savings because of the lack of voluntary savings. And then COVID came, and then people were put on half or part salary or no salary at all. So this lack of voluntary savings hit home, and then it became a lot more obvious that people don't have savings. So the only form of savings a lot of people have is a retirement saving. So we're only opening a window so that people could overcome the financial stress that they had in during the COVID period. But I think the We wanted to create a voluntary, well, a non-voluntary system of savings in within the retirement contribution system. That's why we have these two parts, the savings component or the savings part and the retirement component going into the future once this is implemented in 2024.
That's quite an interesting thought process there. So, I mean, I know that this obviously started off, due to COVID and the recognition that there are life events that people need to be able to access these funds. But I hadn't thought about it as creating a almost compulsory savings, culture, I suppose, because we know about retirement, but savings is different from retirement. So savings are those things for maybe those big events. And that's just an interesting for me that was one of the thought processes. And has National Treasury had a look at what they expect this, the impact they expect this to have on retirement outcomes? Because a lot of people are saying, oh, now that you can access some of your retirement funds prior to retirement, people are going to be worse off. But I think a lot of the research is showing that people are actually going to possibly be better off.
That's correct. Well, there is a plus and a minus. Well, there are pluses and minuses. The minus is that it will be a form of a leakage out of the system because that money would have been sitting in a retirement fund up to retirement. Now we are going to access it now. But the beauty of it is, well, the plus, I suppose, is that it's going to create this compulsory savings retirement. So people won't have to withdraw while they are within, well, before retirement. So they won't have to stay. Because when, in a lot of cases, when people resign, they take the entire retirement fund that they have and then start at a new employer on a zero balance. So with this new system, it won't be starting from zero. You'll be building up on what you already have in the retirement pot. But like you mentioned in your introduction, there'll still be that vested part pots that will still be accessible on retirement. So there will be that negative that it is an immediate leakage from the system. Well, and ongoing in the sense that your retirement part is going to split into two. But the beauty is that money that's going to be locked in the long term into the retirement part. So that would be a preserved part. So you won't have access to it even if you resign in the future.
And I think that is really critical. And I've thought about this a lot, and I thought, that keeping two-thirds, when people argue that this is going to worsen retirement outcomes, I think that people who, there are always people who would have cashed in, because we see it, many people cash in when they change jobs. First of all, two-thirds will be preserved now and they won't be able to cash it in. But those people who wouldn't have cashed in and would have preserved their funds still can leave their money in the savings pot. They don't have to draw it. So I think, you're probably not going to worsen anyone's situation, because people who are going to draw will still draw, but they'll only be able to draw a third effectively. And those who were never going to draw anyway don't have to draw down. So it's, I think, probably on net balance, I think we're going to see it as a net positive. That's probably my opinion on the matter as well. Now, I wanted to also talk a little bit about GEPF members. So we've had a lot of press coverage and educational articles, mostly aimed really at the private sector employees. But we've got this massive, huge, it's the biggest pension fund in the country, which is the Government Employee Pension Fund. And being defined benefit, of course, is going to be different. So perhaps you can explain that they have the same, they're going to have the same thing, the seeding capital, two-thirds, one-thirds, but how is it going to work practically?
You did mention that GPF is a defined benefit fund. It means the fund is defined, well, the benefit is defined by a formula. So you don't have contributions, your own contributions that go into the retirement fund and make well, that they're identifiable to you as a contributor. So GPFR currently uses a system where they deduct the years of service or when somebody makes an early withdrawal. So once you get to age 55, you can take early withdrawal from the GPF. So like any other defined benefit fund, that's what we have proposed to industry, that they should reduce the number of years of service of members when they use the two-pot system.
So they're going to use it as a reduction in years of service. And how are they going to calculate this 10% or 25,000 rand? Because I think GPF members will still also receive that. How are, it, will that also just affect years of service if that withdrawal is made?
It will affect years of service, and well, it's the thing and the what goes into the savings component that the two elements are going to affect the years of service. That's great.
And maybe I'm not sure if this is a fair question to ask you now. I know that the GPF has made submissions to the last draft legislation that came out. Do you think they are comfortable with this, or would they be ready for it in your mind? Because obviously it affects your own staff as well. Do you think the GPF will be on board by March 2024?
Look, I think we've been having discussions with the GPF and they did participate in the comment process because we've been having a comment process to deal with the draft legislation. Look, GPF is a big fund. I think it's got 1.2 million members and probably about 400,000 pensioners. It is big and whatever they do will affect the market. So I think they'll find ways of getting to be ready with everyone else. Look, we can't leave one party and continue with everyone else in the system. So that would be unfair. So we want everyone to be on board so that everyone would have access to the two-pot system on the starting date. So I think there will be teething problems, but I think they will be ready.
Yeah, I imagine. I think for GPF, it's going to be a much bigger challenge, as you said, 1.2 million members, and the admin around that. And I want to actually ask you a little go maybe a little bit later. I want to go back to the question of administration and withdrawals. But one of the other big things that I've picked up in the feedback I've been getting is there was this perception out there that people were going to be able to draw down one third of their existing pension or retirement funds on the 1st of March. I must be honest, I'm not sure. I've certainly never saw that as a proposal from National Treasury, but I think it may have been this confusion about the savings pot. They heard one third, two thirds, and we can access one third, and they assumed that that would be applied to existing funds, which it's not. So why did, though, National Treasury choose this limit of 10% to a maximum of 25,000 rand? For a lot of people, they're saying it's not enough. You know, we had a crisis in COVID. We've got debts. We've got all these issues. It's a drop in the ocean. It's actually not worth it.
Look, I think the one third, two thirds might have come from the confusion of the breakdown of future contributions into the one third, two thirds. But yeah, I can't be certain. It's possibly where it came from. Look, I think the whole thing, we have to keep in mind that a retirement fund is meant for retirement. So, like I mentioned earlier, we are just opening a small window in order for us to create the two pots. The two pots are going to alleviate future leakages in the system by where people make early withdrawals before they get into retirement. So we looked at get some of my numbers here. We looked at statistics from a sample of statistics from the retirement fund industry. They were telling us that 25%, well, that's the statistics that pertain to July 2020. So 45% of fund members had less than 20,000 rands in fund credit in July 2020. And then 16% had less than at between 20 and 50,000 rands. So if you add the two, first two numbers that I've given you, so people who have less than 50,000 make up of about 61%
Sorry, Mr. Maseko, you broke up a little bit there. I just want to clarify. So you're saying 60%, is that what you said? 60%
60%.
of members have less than 50,000 rand in their retirement
And
fund.
less than 50,000 and in well, that's across all types of retirement funds. So the 25,000 10% is meant to balance what would be available at retirement and opening up that window for access at the moment, well, in the short term, let's put it open. So you can imagine if you take away, well, even that 25,000, a lot of people are going to be left with basically small amounts. And then I think there are less things as well. I think we're not the only country that has tried to implement this thing. I think if you were to go into do some research on Chile. So Chile allowed, I think there were three changes in the COVID period where they allowed fund members to access retirement funds. I think after the three changes, about 40% of people are left with zero balance in their fund account. So we don't want to get into that situation. That's why we've opened up this 25,000 10% limit. It might not be a lot for some people, but for some, like you mentioned, somebody might not want to have access to the seeding. So some people don't want, and others do want. And some, if you look at what the individuals who responded, as they were saying, some were asking for 50,000, others were 100,000, some 500,000, 200,000. So that's quite a lot. It's a retirement fund. Like I said, is meant for retirement. So people are now looking at settling debts and other expenses that they need to pay off, which we're saying we're opening this up, settle whatever you want to settle, purchase whatever you need to purchase out of the seeding amount. But the beauty of the whole system is that savings component people are going to be able to access in the longer term. So they shouldn't be focusing on the access amount or the seeding amount. They should be looking at what can be made available in the savings component of the two boxes.
And it is a very interesting debate, of course. And you know, I've been saying to people, you know, you at the end of the day, you've got to be, you know, this sort of magic lump sum to settle your debt isn't always necessarily changing behavior. So I think there's a lot of other issues that that come with it. But you know, for a low income earning person, if they have enough sufficient in their retirement fund, 25,000 rand can settle some of that very expensive short term debt. So I suppose there is obviously
It
some
can, it
logic.
can. Like your debt and my debt and the person next door's debt is it's different amounts. So if we were to go by what the sentiment that people are expressing, what amount would we settle for?
Yeah, everyone, and I tell you, everybody has opinions on this and disagreements about it. So that's the number. We understand why you chose the number, and yeah, it's not a third. I think that's the biggest, probably the biggest educational work I've been doing is explaining to people that no, it's not a third. So that's the
Not
important.
at that. I think the other consideration is it was liquidity, because I think the funds have to remain liquid, so we don't want them to run out of money, and then they have to liquidate their assets in any case. So we also don't want a big impact on financial markets as well. So that's why we limited it to relatively small amount.
I actually wanted to come back to that question because you mentioned it with the GEPF as well, 1.2 million members. You know, if all of them are drawing 25,000 rand, I mean, I don't know, you know, if you add another few million, maybe another million people to that, you know, you're talking serious money that is going to be extracted out of Johannesburg Stock Exchange effectively. So this massive liquidity is going to have to be available and in quite a short window, because I think we're assuming that most people are going to take this money. They shouldn't, but many are going to. So have you, and that was my question as part of this deliberation, have you had discussions with the retirement industry around A, the liquidity, and are they preparing for it? And secondly, the administration. I mean, we spoke about GEPF, 1.2 million people. You know, all of these retirement administrators are going to have to be processing all of these withdrawals.
Look, we've been having discussions with, of course, a lot of the stakeholders that are in the retirement industry. The retirement industry was comfortable with the 25,000. So I think they were saying anything above that it's going to be a bit difficult for them. So I think everyone has to look. We're hoping that not everyone comes in on day one and ask for that amount to be paid out, but I think it's an assumption, but hopefully it doesn't turn out that way.
And I think managing expectations is very important from the industry as well, is to say, listen, we can't do it all on the first day. Give us a month or so, and people just need to be aware of this. And I wanted to ask you though as well. You know that this, from what I understand now, the seeding capital is now going to be automatic. I'm nearing retirement. I don't need the seeding capital. I have no intention of ever touching my savings pot. Can I, you know, and what if I don't want the seeding capital go into my savings pot? Can I ask for it not to, or can I transfer it back into my vested pot or my retirement pot? How does that work?
Well, the system has to work uniformly for everyone. So everyone is going to have a saving capital. But if you don't want to use it, you can keep it in your savings component, or you can transfer it to your retirement component. But you can't put it into your vested pot, because like the vested pot is like a preservation fund, so nothing goes into it. So you can put it into your retirement component. That transfer is permitted.
So I think that's
But I
actually
think we have to try and keep the system. Look, I think remember when we started off with the retirement reforms in 2012, we wanted to keep the system more or less the same for all retirement funds. So we want to keep everything that's there. The two-pot system coming into effect, it has to apply to everyone.
And I think for me, you know, the best advice I can give anyone in my position is just to say, go and, you know, if you get your 25,000 rand in your savings pot, you would rather not be touching it. You can still leave it in the savings pot, but of course, the industry still needs to decide what the assets are that they're going to invest the savings pot and retirement pots in, if they're going to be different, etc. So I may just transfer mine into my retirement pot so that I know it's there. But there's another question I've been getting. A lot of people are very upset that you're going to tax the withdrawal of seeding capital and, of course, any withdrawals from the savings pot in the future. And people are, and one guy saying, but this is crazy. So if I've got 25,000, then there's going to probably be fees, then there's going to be tax. I'm not going to get out nearly enough money. Explain the logic of taxing it.
Look, I think we use what is called the EET system, which means when you make your contributions into a retirement fund, those funds are exempt, tax exempt. And then during the build-up process, while you're still working before retirement, the growth that your fund accumulates is also exempt. That's the second E. And then the T comes at the end when you get into retirement. It's only then that you should have been contributing into tax over the years gets taxed. So over the years, when you build up before retirement, that contribution is not taxed. So it's only taxed at the end. So it's similar in this case. So you contributed, it was tax free because mine was deducted, that went into your retirement. Now it's getting into your hands. Remember the tax principle is any income that comes into your hands has to be taxed. So that's why we have to tax it, because it's now getting into your hands. It's going to your hands.
Hmm. So I think that's something I've been also trying to do a lot of educational work on. So, you know, the 25,000 may not be that significant, but if, say, for example, you build up in the savings pot over a few years, maybe you've got 200,000 now sitting in there, and you now make that withdrawal, that will be added to your taxable income for that year. It could actually have quite a big impact on your marginal tax rate. And I think that's people really need to understand that.
They need to understand. So I think there shouldn't be that big fixation with the seeding amount, 25,000 or 10%. I think that's why I was saying the beauty of the system is on the build-up, on the savings component. That can far, far exceed the 25,000 that's talked about. So I think people should look at this is a future savings component that can be accessed at any time in the future. And that access, you have to use a minimum of 2,000 rands. I think that's what we've said in the legislation. So the beauty is in the future. It's not in the immediate seeding pot.
Yeah, and I think it's just important also to understand the tax consequences of it. Now, I've got through so many of my questions, and I really have appreciated your time. But I have one last question that I have. That's my own question. And really, have you had any clarity? And I know I've read through, obviously, the draft legislation that came out earlier this year. Is there any clarity on what happens to in divorce with the two-pot system or retrenchment? I know retrenchment is going to be part of the second phase, but, you know, can you give us some idea, especially perhaps on divorce and retrenchment?
I think in the current legislation, I think we said the vested pot and the retirement pot would have to be split. But I think in the last comment period, which was, I think, a few weeks ago, I think in the last comment period and the parliamentary debate, which was a few weeks ago, commentators were saying, no, we should split all pots. So your savings pot, your vested pot, and your retirement pot have to be split equally. So we might be going in that direction. But at the moment, what the legislation is saying is let's split the vested pot and the retirement component. The reason why we excluded the savings component is it's fluid. So that person can make withdrawal at any time. So that's what instrument would we have to prevent a person from making an early withdrawal out of the savings component before the finalization of a divorce proceeding? We wouldn't be able to do that unless there is an actual court order. So that money is fluid, but I think the suggestion from a lot of the commentators is we should allow all three pots to be split. But yeah, practically how the splitting is going to take place out of the savings pot, yeah, it's going to be
nothing stopping the spouse to would make a full withdrawal from the savings pot before the court order. Yeah. So I understand that. And retrenchment, I suppose you can obviously take all your funds out of the savings pot. You can also access your vested pot on retrenchment. Is there any thought about having access to the retirement pot?
Look, I think what we suggested is that we should leave that to a second phase of the reform. The reason why we're saying it shouldn't have any immediate impact, in the sense that if you've been working for a relatively long time, you would still have access to your vested pot. So your contributions into the retirement pot would be relatively small as of the implementation date. But I think we're going to work on access to that retirement pot, second phase of the reform.
I suppose it would affect more somebody who's starting to work, you know, and hasn't got the vested pot to already withdraw from. So I imagine that's probably where it's going to be more significant. But Mr. Maseka, I want to say
that's true. I think the other thing is, I think what we were alerted to in the comment period is that the people in some sectors of the industry work for a maximum of 2 years in any one job, and then they resign and then find another job, maybe in the same sector, and then work for another 2 years. So they relatively have nothing over a long, long time. So yeah, I think there are still a few things that we need to consider in the second phase.
Well, I mean, I, you know, when I see some of the statistics, certainly somebody who's sort of 30, in their 30s, about 90% of people will actually take their full resignation, when they resign from the company, will take their full pension funds. So there's probably not as many people with the vested pots that we think they would have unless they've stayed with the same employer for a significant period of time, actually. So, and I think even your statistics, that 60% of people have balances of less than 50,000 is indicative of that at the same time. But I want to say thank you so much, Mr. Maseko, for taking this time. And certainly it's been very useful for me as well, and all the educational work that I'm doing. And I hope the listeners have also gained, and they feel that their questions have been answered, because I can't answer National Treasury's questions for them. So thank you. And thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks for having me. And yeah, I think the key is the retirement fund is for retirement. So I think as much as possible, let's try and keep it that way.
Absolutely. Yeah.